For the Exascale Report, this is Mike Bernhardt. On October 11, 2011, the Department of Energy's Oak Ridge National Laboratory announced the award of a contract to Cray to increase the Jaguar supercomputer to a new capability, a new system level, called Titan. Titan will transform the DOE's Office of Science-supported Cray XT5 system, which is currently capable of 2.3 petaflops, into a Cray XK6 system with a peak speed between 10 and 20 petaflops. Of course, everyone hopes that this will be the first system to achieve the actual 20 petaflops range. This is a big deal. This is a big deal for a lot of organizations. It's a big deal for the United States, particularly the Department of Energy, Oak Ridge National Laboratories, Cray, of course, NVIDIA, AMD, since this is an Opteron CPU-based system. But this is a big deal for science and discovery. We caught up with Jack Wells, the Director of Science for the National Center for Computational Sciences at Oak Ridge, to talk about what this means to the user community, what this means to potential impact on science and discovery when the world starts to work with systems in this 20 petaflops range. How many users or organizations or individual users do you see accessing Titan, let's say, during 2012-2013?
I think that we would be able to maintain a similar population of projects as we have now. Right now in the InSight program at our facility in Oak Ridge, we support and collaborate with 32 projects, and I expect that the demand and our ability to support that number of projects will be sustained.
Do you have any sense of number of individual users?
That's not something that we typically track, and so I don't have that metric in my head. Some of these projects would have three or four individuals contributing. Some of them are larger community efforts with, 10 or 15 users. So, it would vary. But I think that would translate in round numbers. Something like could easily be 500 or 600 users.
Okay. And how do you see the development environment changing for these users as we move up into systems of this scale?
Now, by environment, what are you thinking about here?
How will their access to the systems and their ability to develop and tune and test their applications change?
Well, we're doing a lot of work right now in getting a core set of projects ready for Titan. One of the main questions that arose 2 years ago when we proposed the hybrid architecture was focused on the usability of the future computer. Mm-hmm. This was the main question. And so we have focused on a set of six applications that are representative of our workload and are working with the architects of the code, some of the main users, to get these codes ready, and it's actually become part of the project. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not.
So the acceptance criteria for our machine includes performance metrics on define problems for these six applications.
And could you recite for us what those applications are?
One is S3D, a chemical combustion code out of Sandia, Jackie Chin. Okay. Another is the Wang Landau LSMS code. It's a materials first principle code from here that's been developed at our laboratory. Another code is LAMPS, the molecular dynamics code, authored by our colleagues at Sandia. Another is PFLOTRAN, subsurface transport code. The other is CAM Home. It's the community atmospheric model from the climate community. And the sixth is DENOVO, a neutron transport code that's a part of the workload within the consortium for the advanced simulation of light water reactors, the nuclear energy modeling simulation hub led here at Oak Ridge.
Okay, great. So Jack, when you say there's work being done now, what do the users, the application developers, the programmers, the scientists, what do they actually do now in order to get ready for Titan?
Well, they start learning to program these GPU accelerators within the context of their application and begin to restructure the codes to reveal new levels of parallelism.
So would you say there's a lot of manual work at this point?
Things are improving in that regard as compiler directives are advanced. So many of the compiler companies are coming out with common compiler directives.
Yeah.
That help a great deal.
So your perspective on this, you have a very unique position, I think, in some ways from a lot of folks in that you have the experience on the user side. You have the experience on the leadership side now. So you've kind of danced in both sides there. Would you say that from the early days of being a user on very large advanced computing systems to today, are things easier for the user or are they more difficult?
Well, if we take the 15 or 20-year view, I'm not sure. There's many new challenges. I mean, the new challenges of taking on parallel computing, massively parallel computing in the early days, I think is similar in character. And then, if you think about message passing hardware as before MPI, there was a lot of diversity. But then standards developed and, indefinites in software had a longer life. I think that's what we'll see here.
Okay.
So I think some people may say, oh, it's a really big change, and it certainly is. But in my point of view, some of these things remind me of my attempts to use the different levels of parallelism on the old Paragon supercomputers that we used to have in our laboratory. Now, the dramatic difference is the number of processing threads, right?
Yes.
And this has increased rather steadily, right? And, there was a time when 100-way parallelism was a big deal, and then, 10,000, and then now 10 to the fifth processing cores, and we keep increasing. So this is a big challenge, and I think what you see is that many of the applications that are doing well at these very large core counts, that making progress using a large fraction of the full capability, many of them have taken on bigger problems, right? Bigger, more realistic problems that have higher degrees of fidelity, that embrace real-world realism, stochastic behavior, ensemble behavior. These kind of applications are the ones that are advancing science and engineering using the full capability of the machine.
Yes, excellent. So that brings me to an interesting discussion point, I think. What gets you the most excited about the capabilities of where we might have an impact, a positive impact on science and discovery when you think about processing at a 20 petaflops level? We talk about the importance of these applications being able to go where we haven't gone before, but quite frankly, from some of the discussions I have with the, let's call it the lay community, a lot of people don't get it. They don't understand why that's actually important, why we have to keep pushing the envelope. Talk a little bit about, if you would, how you see life changing when 20 petaflops starts to be the bottom of the production or performance scale.
Now, this is a very, very good question. I think in computational science in general, as we go forward, I see two general thrusts. And if you allow me to speak from the point of view of material science, an area that I've worked, I will, and say I see that we will we can do predictive science today. We can predict many observables, but certainly not all. There are certain challenges that have not been fully achieved. I think about excited states, for example, in the semiconductor material. This is still a big challenge. But as we go forward with this improved theoretical approaches and, you know, expanded capability, I think what you'll see is increasingly predictive calculations performed on some of these historically challenging problems. The other thrust will be an attempt to utilize available methods, current state-of-the-art methods, to do materials discovery through high throughput means, through approaches that incorporate experimental data and computational data in an integrative approach to, you know, reduce the space of materials that are searched, for example, to find new battery materials or new materials for solar PV. This materials design, this materials discovery process, I think, is and will be transformed going forward through the application of computational science, modeling, and simulation. So we'll get more predictive theories, we'll get more predictive capabilities, and we'll get the broader application of our theories to problems that impact society.
And in terms of an access convention, do you see cloud playing a role at all?
Yes, I do. I think, that is part of the story of computational science and engineering. And there's no doubt that this will be the cost-effective solution with an emphasis on effective. Scientists will take advantage of these resources where it makes sense for them, and that's the way it should be.
And on an international scale, do you see what we're doing? Obviously, you know, DOE is driving, you know, the technology, I think, leadership for the country at this point, or at least it seems that way to most of us. Do you see the U.S., because of an effort like Titan and what will be coming beyond that, maintaining some level of technology leadership? Because a lot of people have been criticizing the U.S. on that in the past.
Well, my understanding of U.S. science and engineering policy is that there's a broad consensus around the role of the federal government in advancing supercomputing and then using supercomputing as a tool for advancing technology, science, and in general U.S. competitiveness. I think there's a strong bipartisan consensus there. Of course, other countries also perceive the value of supercomputing, and they're investing as well. So leadership, I think, should be defined in terms of impact, and that is best measured over an extended period of time. But I think we're committed to leadership and impact. Now, I think certainly Europe and Asia are making significant investments in supercomputing. Some of the investments in Europe that stand out to me are their investments in application software. There are strong teams and strong programs in Europe that are funding integrated coded teams to advance particular areas of science that they feel that they have a leadership role in. And I think that's significant.
All right, so it's not so much about just achieving, for example, a LINPECH benchmark or building a stunt machine, but you're talking about long-term contribution.
No, that's right. I mean, these application codes, they're maturing all the time, but they are long-lived.
I think to kind of wrap things up here, and I know that you can't formally take a position or make a comment about what recently happened between IBM, NCSA, and Blue Waters, but as the entire global community is aware of it, what steps are you taking at ORNL and your leadership computing facility to ensure long-term program success and to keep Oak Ridge and your partners and all the suppliers and so forth working in harmony moving forward?
Well, I think several of the things we've touched on already are relevant to this question. One thing that's really important for long-term program success is a sustained bipartisan policy on the role of supercomputing in science and engineering. And I think we have that. If that goes forward, as it is today, I think it's a strong foundation on which to build the future. Relative to the current inflection point that we have in technology necessitated by, the energy consumption of these large machines, as we move forward in energy-aware computing, the broader industry is already doing this, right? With all the investments in mobile computing and game hardware, the broader IT industry is making significant investments in these accelerators, right?
Yeah.
So the technology risk of our platforms going forward, I think, is really quite modest. There's always a risk at putting these machines together at scale, but that's something we've had a track record of managing. Certainly, the perception of the risk to these machines being useful for science and engineering has been, over the last 2 years, their usability by the science teams. And I tried to emphasize for you earlier the role we are playing at making sure that the machine is demonstrably usable, right?
Yep.
And then I think computer science programs, computer science researchers will have a role in, let's say, generalizing or abstracting the lessons that are learned by these coding teams and using these hybrid architectures, generalizing these lessons learned so that they're more readily available by a broader community of people.
We've been talking to Jack Wells, Director of Science for the National Center for Computational Sciences at Oak Ridge National Laboratories. For the Exascale Report, I'm Mike Bernhardt.